the greatest gift that I got was from Bo, because Bo taught me how to write. Bo is, as far as I'm concerned, the scribe of Narcotics Anonymous. And if y'all don't know that, you should know that. He says, well, no, it's Narcotics Anonymous. No, Bo is the scribe for Narcotics Anonymous. It's how I always see him. It's how I think of him. It's what I believe to be true about him. I had a few days clean, and he said, well, you need to start writing. And I said, to who? And he said, well, to yourself. I was like, well, okay. He said, because you don't know anybody else yet. And I sat in his print shop in the middle of the night, and he handed me a pen and a piece of paper. And that has started a journey that has been incredible. And every time I pick up a basic text, Bo Sewell is in every page of it. And I'm grateful. I love you. You're my heart. And this is it.
And the visitors. Well, I'm really appreciate that, Casey. You're one of my real sisters in this life. The powers are built into the time reality, and I think what happens to us in our using is that we get like we lose our grip on reality, honestly, on drugs. And when you can't find reality test upon, they put you in jail or bury you or put you in a hospital. And, you know, the road back is still like a real God-given, you know, mysterious thing to me. And, you know, I was, you know, when I share up here, you know, you might experience faith and hope, and it's not necessarily right or wrong, it's just, you know, the best I can come up with right now. And from past experience, we're dealing with unimportant details, and, you know, if I follow from the past, I'm going to try to believe as much as that, and I'll share the things that the fearful part of me doesn't want you to know about. Not that they're bad things, but I mean, they're very close to my heart. One thing, I was sort of twisted by the fact that as I grew up, I became more and more aware that my dad's dad, my grandfather, had committed suicide. And that was all the more mad because he'd been a multi-year on the ghost train. So I grew up wondering, well, money must not be the answer, you know. More than most people would because of that. And also, if you're rich or famous or whatever, I mean, I'm not rude and polite, I hope, but I'm not necessarily impressed by money or a title. Like, I remember when I was a kid, I met Eddie Arnold, you know, a country music star, and he was at the edge of the athletic field of Georgia Tech. And he was just a guy standing there, and he was nice to me. He wasn't too nice, but he was just, you know, just a regular guy. And he was in the music business, made songs. We didn't talk a hell of a lot. We just kind of stood to go, you know, 5 or 10 minutes. But he gave me a feel. And I think what must have happened with me, I mean, for one thing, I harvested a field of red back in the jars. Maybe that's fanatic, you know. I went around right the after dinner drinks after the year's party the next morning, eating the beers and had cigarette butts in them. Just kind of had some over my. And maybe that's an act. You know, I made my own homebrew when I was like 13 or 14 years old, sugar and water on the raisins and sugar and water on the windowsill, plus 9 days. Raisins come to the top. You kind of pour off the mash and put that answer sugar in the bottom, watch it disappear. Turn down the house. So maybe that was addictive behavior. Or maybe it was the night that we I moved out from my folks and I sat on the Baltimore block and watched a big night in Atlanta. Because I really like beatniks, because you can sit around and drink coffee and talk about anything. And I was 14, and they were like 18 and 20 and 30, you know. And I could talk to them about things, and if I tried to talk to my teenage friends about those things, they would just, you know, what's he talking about? And so maybe I was like looking for somebody to talk to way back then. I'm convinced it's an A event in my environment, I would probably gravitate to it. You know, we got a reason and interest in Stoicism because it's, the Stoa was like an outdoor place where people came and talked. And I think that whole philosophy evolved in that pre-Christian. But I had more than the normal amount of questions when I was a kid. When I moved down on the block, I lived down there a good many months, and there was a steam junkie from New York City, and Mary Anderson, who was Bill Anderson's sister, would write the script. She'd get the script from the doctor for diet pills or whatever. Shelby, the newspaper editor, would pay for it, and then Lon would do about 90% of it. And Ron told us that he was an ex-ballet dancer from the San Francisco ballet troupe. In the middle of his, you know, speed bump, that would flash by every now and then. We kind of, you know, really. But then he started teaching us ballet. And that's a nice song in a late night movie, you know, on the screen at the end of the movie, it says San Francisco Ballet Company. So maybe he was, I'm not real sure. But, you know, ideas in our world, some things are more fantastic than others, but it doesn't mean they're untrue. And so, and he also said, well, I was down in Florida, Texas, and I was in jail with this guy that said, I have an alligator ranch. He's going to send some peyote from Old Mexico next time I run down there. And he said, just in the last week, so I'll be there in town. Went on. Somebody stole the pink slip, tried to dance, swipe the dope, and they couldn't, they wouldn't let them have it in the post office for a long time. So we all cut it up and made the valley. I mean, that was evidence of the addiction. And say how, like, we put towels to people, like, on the ceiling, and we have to let know some cars here, if they'll be right back. It's very spooky. And, and he also said that I was emotionally selfish, which I thought was very discerning to anybody to say. And I think what it is, like a lot of us, I just feel things so passionately that if I'm not careful, I get overwhelmed with my emotions and stuff. So I try to pick people that I feel safe with, you know, before I share my heart, because well, in heaven, you're only crying in front of a bunch of your enemies and stuff, right? I mean, I guess you could, but, you know, I'm weird, but I ain't that weird. But anyway, so years passed, and my first lover was out of that crowd. She was 19, I was 14. And 7 years later, she had a second wife. And so I read Stephen King's book called, can't think of the name of it, it'll come to me. I remember it was one of the Richard Bachman series. But it was about this play, it was a science fiction thing. Some kid made inventions, and it was supposed to be good, but it wound up killing everybody in the planet. But in the early part of it, he's talking about this one guy being like a genius, but his compass would wander, and he could never really settle on anything. And anything he tried to do, he could do and do rather well, but he just couldn't hold an interest in it. And then finally, it worked on something, and then he said, Steve King said that in the book, that's kind of like the way it is for some people, because they finally found their magnetic, their true north, and after that, they're overrated. Well, that's the way I am with Narcotics Anonymous. Because every damn thing, I mean, college, the beatniks, the hippies, marching against the war, against Charlie the Klan, all that fits in with being an NA member. A little bit of college. I mean, I made an F on my first exam in English 101, and I made an A plus on my 7th. I just climbed the scale, of, you know, F, B, C, A, A plus. And he walked over the desk and said, "What happened here, Miss Cole?" I said, "Well, apparently you taught me how to write a theme." Another way of saying stay on the subject. My mind still wanders sometimes. But I do know that I can have a structure, at least knowing that. And so I went there for 2.5 years, but on the way to school one day, I had a motorcycle wreck, and I laid up for a couple of months still doing block my cousin, and I went back to college. Also, since I didn't go back to college, I was not qualified for the draft, so the rest of the draft was in the notice, which made me a little nervous. And, you know, this is just my take on it, right? This may not be real, it might be very real. My objection to going to Vietnam was that while I might be good at killing people, it might not be good for me. And plus, I really didn't want to do it. I had heard of football scores given one night, and rising football scores, and said, in 50 U.S. killed, and 500 South Vietnamese, 5,000 North Vietnamese. And the very next night, more football scores, and 75 Americans killed, 750 South Vietnamese, 7,500 North Vietnamese. I realized the figures were just bogus. And I got real suspicious that I might be able to not trust our national government too much. And years later, with this situation on my hands, I thought, well, you know what, I could just try real hard to dodge crap, and then if I make it, then fine, I'm off the hook. And if I don't, I'll just get my gun and go murder people. Try to come through alive, no names. And so, this one friend of mine, Dave Baker, his dad is a colleague of mine, did some of those things. But he gave me a list of things to do when you go down to the airport so that they don't take you. Like, see bleeding things on the table, and they'll set you up in a little room, and they come in, you know, like, snap your food, when you get in here, and just say, when you hear it, say, "I can't hear nothing." How speak and go like, "There it is." It's simple things. And so they sent me a psychiatrist. This guy's talking about how much good he is in the services. He says, "What do you do as a guy to cycle load of the services?" He says, "What do you do for them?" I said, "I'm from newspapers." Well, you know. And he said, "How many do you throw?" I said, "Not 500 or not." "Well, I mean, you can't do that with cycle load of the services." You can't. Let me do the math. You get the papers at 2, they got to be delivered by 6. But I'm really kind of a paper, you know? Yeah. And so, when I got TNA, I think the first thing, oh, hell, I ran a nonprofit thing down the strip that lasted for 2 years. The last year, it got so crazy and so rough that a couple of times, I became famous on 611 Park News. And you would tell your boyfriend that I'd teach your ass or something, but then he'd want to beat my ass and hit me down an alley and be like attacking me. And I'd fight my way out of it. And I'd been a fighter in school and all that, like star wrestling and all that. But I started getting nervous because sooner or later, you know, the guys are getting bigger. And I started carrying a gun. And I had a lot of respect. I mean, one biker, you know, beat me up and down the sidewalk, and I beat him down. I said, "Look, I don't know what the hell this is about. 5 minutes, I'll shot you by now." He looked down the 6 gun, and he said, "Let's go get over here." I said, "Okay." And I never even found out what the fight was about. I mean, that's how it was down there. The main thing I learned in those 2 years is that there was no hope anywhere on the planet Earth for adequate recovery. No hope anywhere, not in Tibet, not in Europe, Central Atlanta. And that's scary, because I think part of my little addictive imagination, I was predicated that there's something out there, you know, that you can go home to, but really there's nothing. And, damn, That bothered me. And I read this book called The Beats. That's B-E-A-T-S, for anybody who transcribes this tape. Not B-E-A-T-S. And like beatniks. And there was a chapter in there on Synanon. And it said that it met in the building where a chapter of Narcotics Anonymous held its meetings. So that was the first time I knew the name. And then years later, when I was on the strip, I called Chuck Dietrich, who flew out and visited Synanon. Place of Synanon names. But that was before they started putting rattlesnakes in mailboxes. I heard the first, I was asked about the 12 steps. I guess a lot of people have a 12 steps story. I said, what are these steps? Is that a ladder or something? He's talking about the steps. And I'd never heard of them. And I'm still drinking on the strip, of course. I mean, nobody ever suggested I might be, not doing that. Related it to some extent. Well, chug lugging just carrying the things done. Never shot anybody. But it's just a miracle. So right at the end of that is when I first called Narcotics Anonymous, seeking help from me, actually. And there was no listing in last. So I called around, called AA, somebody there said they knew somebody that might have a white booklet and all the law. So I got a copy of that and held 78 because that was 1971. And then my clean date is July 10th, 1974. I got married again. Marriage slowly fell apart again and got divorced again. And right at the end of it is when I started, I went over to where I had gone to one of the AA meetings with the guy that had been my vice president, and Jim, and he's been in that program all these years. I started going there about a month later. I mean, within a week I was going to a meeting a day, just checking it out. I didn't have anything else to do. And within 9 days, they made me coffee chair. But then, that was July, sometime in August, they had the NA meeting out of Pittsburgh. And I didn't want to go that, but I did. And I liked it. I just kept going back for 5 years. So slowly, over a period of time, over 3 years, we went from one meeting a week, to 2 meetings a week, to 3 meetings a week, to 4 meetings a week, to 5 meetings a week. And I went to a meeting today, so I went to 110 meetings in my first 90 days. And every time there's a new NA meeting, I'll drop one of the AA meetings. And finally, after 3 years, I was going to 7 meetings a week, all NA. Well, all of a sudden, we're then talking about, NA and who's working on this, and their book, where's WSO, or whatever it is, where's Group Conscious, we had a copy of the tree. And we weren't getting real clear answers from the West Coast, so we flew out there in 77. And World Convention, San Francisco. And in that 3 years, and I think this is very telling and very important, I was really scared that there was something good to get in NA. I mean, if you really wanted to, and that you had to work the steps to get it, I was afraid that I'd rush ahead and get so involved in the other crap that I wouldn't get recovery. I'd never really worked my steps. So I just agonized over surrender. I mean, I doubled what step two and got me a whole new belief system. I mean, God is a sheep. And I checked it all out. And I'd never done that before, and it was very revealing. And naturally, I had what? Fear and inhibition. I didn't want to do it, but I did anyway. Because I wanted to be one of the ones that did walk out the door. I wanted to stay clean, see what all this was about. It was the most interesting thing in the world to me. No more than just the level of wanting recovery for myself. Hell, the first 9 months. It was kind of hard for me to imagine what recovery deal. I was drinking, but I knew it. I get drunk. There was no compulsion. As far as I know, I've never done any DTs or anything. It was not hard to put down. You got to like not drink to go to these meetings, like who would you do? And I stopped shooting drugs earlier. And that was different. I didn't talk for about 2 years. And that was a little one, man. In this 3 years that I was really working my steps, step 4, 5, 6, and 7, and, step 7 being the bookkeeping dream come true, you get to be another person. Steps work, you get to be another person. You stop being yourself, you get to be yourself. maybe self where the dreams come true. And I think the steps move from the inside to the outside, really from consonance. But you start with the surrender, the additions, you change your belief system. Your mind filters, I cannot see, the ear cannot hear, that which the mind cannot contain. And so when you clear your system, then you can start seeing things that are really there and stop seeing the hallucinations. And I think God works the fourth step when you turn your life and your will over. Because what act could be fearless and fearful about anything? And, you know, 8 and 9 extend the process. So anyway, I started on this real serious because I didn't want to get loaded. I mean, everybody that came to NA in 1974 got loaded, except me. And it was just very damn few. Go to conventions. I mean, you know, 20, 30 years, 29, 28, you know, nobody hardly ever stands up. So, it's sad, you know. My hope is this weekend, this will be a step towards cessation of the infighting and the hatred and backstabbing and the stuff that we suffer from. I told some of the people that upset at the conference here, I said, let these people go. They need to damn hear each other talk. They need to get over that shit. Put closure on it, process it, let's get on with it. I mean, a lot of really good things have happened. A lot of really good people have died. You know, we don't need to keep living in the past. I mean, it's no legacy. It's Jimmy Cage. Jimmy Cage is a friend of mine. It's no legacy. Hatred is not supposed to be part of his legacy. Jimmy would not approve. I didn't tell you that. As far as all this stuff about the office, I write about this stuff and this and the other. So I'm not even going to try that, my little scenario of what happened with the key at the office. Well, maybe I shouldn't look at it, but I'll keep it brief. I think Bob Stone came in there. Jimmy had not gotten out of the office in a few days. Bob Stone found out that a lot of people had keys to the office, and he got new keys made, probably one for Jimmy, and Jimmy hadn't picked it up yet. But the moment that he hit the door was locked, and he felt he was locked out and left. So there was no chance to rush out and say, here's your key, Jimmy. But everybody expected, and my group, everybody expected Jimmy to stay on and play a symbolic leadership role, and we were all happy to acquiesce to that. But like it's been otherwise said on the tape, you know, we begged Jimmy, I called him, written, come by his place, and asked him to please, you know, get involved, write something, we want to put part of another look, which is his story, and the basic text, and perfect place, plug it right in. He wouldn't do that. So that's why we just accept it and script. You know, the best thing about acceptance is you don't have to understand. You just accept it and get to go on. So it's kind of pitiful. Doug Epp came up to me and said, you got to get Jimmy involved in the book. I said, well, that's a marvelous idea. Doug, we never thought of that. Why don't you help with that? Because we called it and written it into the house many times. We don't seem to be getting anywhere, so maybe you can do it. Well, anyway, he's been testing me ever since. I'm not going to say that. But anyway, I'm not pissed at anybody. I'm not pissed at him. I'm not pissed at anybody else. We just need to stop fighting instead for our children in recovery. It confuses them, and it makes them think that old-timers really can hate each other. And I hope that's not so. Because I do believe in the recovery process. So, and it always confused us, and I said this at lunch, and I'll say it now, because it's one of the things I was talking about earlier that I wouldn't want to share. I asked Greg Pierce years later, why the Californians were so upset with us. And what he said, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but what Greg Pierce actually said, being a Californian, from California, he said, well, their time to write the book came, and they tried and found it to be impossible. In their experience, therefore, when they see you all doing it, it pisses them off because you're doing the impossible, so you must be up to something. So I thought, well, I'll store that away for future reference. But, you know, I would surely like to think that all the people that get to get clean, stay clean, and at least have a chance to go into a spiritual life, is a better, a great replacement for that flood of people that used to come and leave, come and leave, and come. 50 people show up, 49 and leave. Because that's where it used to be. And we used to have people cruising through our rooms, laughing at us, picking up chicks, and the NI doesn't work, and you got to go to AA for real recovery. I told the board that's writing on the book, I said, if you want that to stop, help us get the book done. And so I just want it to be known in the general fellowship and to, you know, just mark it down. The people that wrote your basic text, and I'm one of them, had something, you can't say about outcomes, because in a way we were willing to fail. But what we talked about and verbalized among ourselves was like, well, if we're going to fail, we're going to get a running start and hit that ball so hard that when our brain is flatter everywhere, somebody's better than us, is smarter than us, and we're able to do it, we'll come forward and get the ball rolling. And, you know, God gave us the looks. What can I say? I hope you don't think we wrote it. We were there. But we prayed to be used as an instrument. The real lit prayer was, free me from self-will and ego, and give me sufficient strength and guidance to do your footwork. And at that point, get the word out. So we wrote a letter, the word went out. Office of WSO. Jenny Kennan said, you are on the WSO Lit Committee. You are on the Board of Trustees Lit Committee. Write us a letter, Bo, because I had been writing stuff that said it in, because I met Greg in San Francisco. And that's what he said, who the most. So I wrote a little letter. I said, well, why am I writing a letter? Why don't you guys write it? I ain't nothing. I ain't elected anything. And that's when Jenny said I was on one of those boards. I said, well, I don't remember the election, but if you say I'm on there. So I wrote this letter, and I lucked out that day. I got successfully insulting. The key line I've been told in the letter was that the reason we don't have a book is because nobody's really tried yet, but they just don't know the need. And that pissed them off just enough to get them right without making them walk away. And that's what somebody told me. But, you know, and then I studied Dale Carnegie because, you know, just being a kid, I remember when I was 16, I read How to Win Friends and Influence People. And the key principle in there, and he evaluated everything. What's the key, you know, come on people, what's the key urge for our species? What is the deepest craving in human nature? What is the deepest craving? Is it food? Is it sex? Is it money? What is the deepest craving in human nature? The craving to be appreciated. Most of us, if we're ever really appreciated, react as tears. Most of us come from families where addiction is born. And Mama thinks I'm good for cutting the yard. To this day. All this other stuff confuses it. And I do cut the yard, and I'm really good at it. Not often, though. But anyway, so when people would send in, if you wrote me a little, two or three paragraphs after I was selected for a lit chair through a sequence, I think mainly over the 100 pages that I wrote. Not that it was good. I don't know that many people read it, but it was fanatic. It was 100 pages, so, you know, for that new chair. And the conference, most people don't know about the other two big things I was on, the WSO Lit Committee and the WSD. But, you know. Think of them as like I was a soldier, and then like little medals or something, decorations for service. But not killing people. And so we try to be kind of fat-footed and commonsensical about it. I'd write you a letter back so good that you would be dying for your husband to come home, or for your wife to come home. squirrel hunting, squirrel lip, better yet. I got a little letter from the lip community today.
Thank you so much. We tell each other that's terrific. When we get out to all of our friends, and it's very important that you keep writing and doing more stuff to help us. We're so, so grateful. And here's some people close to you that you can contact, their contact information.
And by the time you got some show on the letter to your girlfriend there that night, you thought, I could write some more stuff. And they did. And I kept, you know, saying, well, we got another 5 or 10 pages in today, or, you know, we got 200 pages, and then it's 400, 500. And for some reason, that didn't make any sense to the Californians. So, if you're having trouble getting results, you vary your approach, right? So I put it into pounds. I said, well, we have about 20 pounds of input. And they were like,
that's a lot.
And came a real deal. And there was a little bit of showmanship involved because I wanted the conference people to know that we really were getting input. So at the next conference I went to, and all these towels in a big Foot Locker, you know, take off the Foot Locker, you get it like places, Walmart and stuff. So it's like full of all these towels and stuff. So I lug it into the conference like this. Oh, these other conference attendees were watching, like, the hell's he in my box? And I set the box over there and left the lid open, and they're kind of like, they'd be subtle about it, so you can see them homing in on that box, looking down in there. And it really was input from the fellowship, was the basic text. And we had a first conference, and let's see, I was elected in 79. And I felt like group conscious was the way to go from the beginning, so I asked the conference to set the site, and they said it in Wichita, because it was at the Twin Coasts. And about 25 people showed up, and we had a little place in the community center in downtown Wichita. That's where Liz Jarrett's come from, along with all the corn cows. And locals called it Wichita Hands Ass. So we worked very hard that weekend, and we did minutes on how to form a Blit committee, minutes on how to do a newsletter, minutes on possible chapters of the basic text, minutes on how do you fundraise within traditions, and all that. Anyway, it was a kind of a fantastic thing to see. The minutes were incredibly rough shape. And they were very hard to decipher, so they couldn't do them in winter class. They sent us, I couldn't get someone to do them, or such and such to them. And I wound up going through the minutes, and they were undecipherable, except for the cover page. And but I could put together what they were saying, because I had been there, and I was the chair, and I had interacted with the committees and sat in on them. So I started writing down all the stuff, you know, putting it into prose. And it turned into quite a few sheets of paper, and it was typewritten. And so I had a printer buddy in Marietta, and he said, y'all are real lovely with all that stuff. He's a little country boy named Philip Page. And I said, oh, look, would that be too hard? We couldn't do that. And he said, no, it ain't nothing, man. Just type it up. We'll have it typed that over here at Marietta Reaper Graphics. I'll print it on my own press for you. Give me the price. Do 1,000 copies. And so that's what we did. And so that's how the handbook for NA Lit Committees was born. Because we just kept plugging away and didn't give up. And then, amazingly, that approved it off at the conference. We thought it was going to be a $2 a copy fundraiser for the World Lit Committee because we had no subsidy, no funds. They had to come up every dollar, every stamp, every envelope, every piece of paper out of our own pockets. And we were later, about a year later, reimbursed with receipts only. So we thought that was kind of typical. But to us, our people were dying. And so while we tried to keep a straight face through some of these scenarios, what we were really, it's kind of like Jews in Germany during World War II. You know, you might be nice to Nazis, but it's not because you like them. not that the West Coast is haunted, but you know, the funding and the other little things that happened and all was strange. And you know, Jenny, going back to Jenny for a second, he was always very supportive and friendly and loving and terrific and making positive suggestions and all that. But my fantasy is that he had some buddies working on him, whispering shit into his ears. I don't know. But some of the stuff is pretty fantastic. You know how dope things are. And so that's what happened when he got left to my imagination. But anyway, we were not worried. We weren't. Our main job, and from the holy books I studied, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and looking at all this from a grave sad casket, was keep our eye on the ball and don't get distracted and pray for strength and guidance. And distraction was anything that would get us off the next positive thing we could do. So we just didn't get distracted. And we got the handbook done. Well, lo and behold, they thought so much of our work that even though it turned out way after the 90-day review period, they decided to approve it. So the $2 went to WSO. And we had to fund ourselves for the second year. And they messed around. They made me the chair again. And so we set another conference site. And the conference decided where it's going to be. The next World Convention, this is an interesting fact about internet history that I don't think anybody knows because I never hear it brought up, is, you know, the AA program, you heard of that? We have a young people's component, and they have a convention. And so wherever, just by luck now, when the AA Young People's was in Southern California, that's where the NA World Convention went. And then when the Young People's AA Conference was in San Francisco, that's where the next year they have an NA Convention. I didn't call that. I didn't check it out. No, it's just a fucking rumor. The important part of it, it's not a rumor, is once we started having these lit conferences, we had a lit conference in Wichita, and it got from San Francisco to Houston to Atlanta. I shared the Atlanta World Convention with no guidelines. Call California, give me some guidelines. There ain't none. Oh, God, are you kidding? Call Houston, they might know something. I called Houston. They were all mad because they all fight after the convention, you know, the committees would. They set aside personal preference in favor of group purpose until the condition was over, then they didn't. So they used to have God bless them. And that guy that chaired the Milwaukee World Convention, he was the one that actually sent us a bundle of input. And you know how many of his subcommittee chairs came forward and helped him write the input? Big fat zero. It made him so damn mad that he made a really good report on how to do merchandising, how to do hospitals and hospitality, and how to do program committee and the whole thing. And so what I did was elaborate on it. I chaired a world convention, he chaired a world convention, and he had a base document, so I elaborated on it. Then I finally got a group conference 6 months later at Memphis, and I said, we're going to play a game here. Y'all have all got copies of it. I'm going to read it, and I'll test the reading around. But then I want you to write down, because at some point you're going to want to say, I'd like to say such and such, throw your hand up. Well, before you throw your hand up, write down what you would say on the piece of paper, and you can throw your hand up. And I'll keep my eyes on them. When you threw that hand up, I said, I didn't see no writing back there. And so the trick was, you wrote down what you had to say about it, and then later, I had a stack of 20 or 30 sheets, copies of the document. That's what became the approved convention guidelines 7 years later. Because it's group conscious. I mean, by then, I knew about the process. How to involve other people with it. It doesn't matter what I think. What the hell do I know? But you get 50 people together and get what they collectively think. Now you've got something. It's interesting. And all the little discoveries are just thrilling. You lose your fear of the process. It becomes addictively curious. It'll draw you. But, so anyway, the second World Lit Conference was in Lincoln, Nebraska. And we had, this town, I think about maybe 40, 50 people show up. We were all real poor. We just pooled our money and sent out the chili. And we just, you know, we were all hungry as hell, made the chili. And we met at, they had this federal building in downtown Lincoln. I squeeze it in, honey. It likes to taste like this, so there ain't no shortage. But, so I'm trying to put stuff that ain't on those tastes in this. Now, so Jim Inn set it up with the rhinos in downtown Lincoln, Nebraska. Not panhandle us, but we were writing a book. And the mom stopped us and said, okay. And one kid came in loaded and was so rambunctious. And I had a really good surrender. So I could be aggressive, but I could also surrender last year. And Bob Deacon showed up, and Greg Pitt showed up, our old trustees. So we got our subcommittee, that is Deacon, did help from the trustees. And the system worked back then. And this kid was loaded, and I didn't want to come. I didn't want to turn out. You know, I was here. I could go with a couple of South fellows and said, I'm going to be taken outside and I'm going to call. I didn't do none of that because I'm in some lit conference, man. You don't want to be in a spoiled atmosphere. You know, we're not a bunch of thugs. So what happens, the most great thing that could have happened, you know, the guy's like talking out of his head a little bit and asking questions out of turn, we'll be talking for 10 or 15 minutes. This young lady sitting right here, she said, she realized nobody else was going to step into the moment, so she said, we're writing this book for you, but we're not going to let you stop us from writing it. So you need to go outside now. And that was good. And then I remember sitting right here, and this little cute Wichita gal came in, or Midwestern gal, cute woman out there. She sits down, she's visiting, you know. This is. I tell her a little purpose. I said, if you said you left prayer, she said, what's that? I said, well, they said this prayer for God to remove the self-will and ego and give the strength and gas to do his footwork. Look, we've printed out a piece of paper here. Once you take it out of the hall, do your lip prayer and then come back in. She said, okay. So she leaves the paper about 5 minutes later. She comes back in. She's throwing her hands up. She's like 10 foot and stuff. Because ego's out of the picture. We all knew what the rules were. We agreed to them. We all surrendered to them. So it wasn't nuts. That might have looked nuts to an outsider, but, you know, we were very careful about these things. And we would also do other things that probably looked like outsiders. One thing would be getting into people's face and asking them how they really work the step, or like, well, you obviously have something to say. You're going to spit it out. We're down the alley. We'll work it over some, huh? Just kidding. But when your body hears those words and sees that body language and shit, you say, well, blah, 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 I actually do so-and-so. Write it down. Thank you, sir. Write it down. It's what it works. Well, it's what people that get out of universities and get a job at WSO out of a movie company maybe or something like that, here's what they think of that literary technique. They think we're insane. So that's what happens to our lit process. That's why the lit work that I'm doing for the fellowship right now, and I work on it every single day, is outside the structure. I mean, I can't exactly explain what happened, but I mean, we set World Lit to be a support system for addicts, secret recovery, and people who want to do some good things to contribute to our common welfare. And we no longer have a support system. Well, it's not there. More trustees isn't there. We have to get anything done. We have to work outside the system. How do you like that, Mr. Tate? That's the truth. And plus, we're making it. I mean, the stuff reads good. I get all teared up. I can talk about it, okay? But when I read it, I get teared up. You know, so much loving and caring and concern for you there. The Inner Way of Life book is the application of spiritual principles. And it's a continuation of where the basic text left off. The basic text is basic because we were young then. We didn't get input on employment, so we didn't feel it was our place to make that nothing. We didn't get input on parenting, so we didn't think it was our place to make that nothing. We did get input on getting over abuse, neglect, and recovery. We didn't feel it was our place to make up anything. Today, we get plenty of input on those things. We have past chapters. We've got a chapter on sex. So we call it a not-so-basic text for adults. And every week, I ship more books than WSO shipped in the 20 years preceding the basic text. And I do it on the DNA Foundation group. And we send surplus funds to WSO, and they send us nice little thank you notes. So, we're happy. I hope they're happy. I hope you're all happy. And I hope that many good miracles come from this conference. There were other conferences, but like I said, there are No, fair's fair. The staff says five. Oh, please share your vision. She's coming in. My staff seems to understand these things. Please share your vision of the future of NMA. And I first got married the first time. I've been married more 7 times. The first time, we went down to Rich's apartment store. We were buying a couch. When I walked in, I saw this couch. It looked good to me. I was ready to go right then. But I went around the store and looked at every other damn couch that was in the entire place. Came back to couch number one, ordered it, and shipped it. I think that's how the fellowship thinks. So when in follow periods, I figured the fellowship's out so much thinking about it. And I do believe the waveforms of a lot of things, including our fellowship. And I think that the fellowship has come to a place now where they're starting to ask questions again, they're starting to think again, they're starting to evaluate answers and verify or deny facts, supposed facts, reported facts. And we have a very interesting language within our NA society. I remember the years that we learned misinformation, disinformation, and all that. And you know, if it's wrong data, it's wrong data. If it's information, it becomes a phone book. I try cutting up a phone book and putting each little piece of paper in a box. Now I'm finding Mary Jones's phone number. You can't do it. It's not information. So we're coming into an era where people are hungry for real facts and they're willing to sacrifice the personal preference for group goal like we're all doing. And I tell people, I say, anything the World Services is not going to do, you do it. If you want a world record, you make a world record. Somebody here could go home, and tonight before morning, if you kept at it, you could find enough regional meeting lists to post a world record in our person's office and print out. Go sleep. You'd be tired. But, I mean, you know, in the old days, we couldn't do that. You know, if you say, you know, you need information out somewhere, you need some help with public information or literature or whatever, just innovate. And we've got a history now. You've got tapes now. You can check out our techniques. I've written books on how to make the tapes written. So you can access all that. If you have any trouble, ask one of us. I'll let this be my closing thing because this would be a good place to close it. There are more conferences. The one rule that I have that, fortunately, I never kicked anybody's ass over this or got them thrown out of the committee over it, but our rule was that we never speak ill of others. Get that? Never. Why? Because it redounds on you. You may feel powerful for a moment or two, but you just don't see it coming. But if you speak ill, or if you actually wish harm to somebody else, then you're going to have 4 flat tires in a row. That's where that, when you don't do that, that's when you have them good days. So all of us try to be careful about that. And as far as I know, in my experience, I never heard our entire expectation about Jimmy Kay and the WSO is that he would go on there in an honored position. Not as some kind of stupid figurehead, but as, like, if you want to know Jimmy Kay, get the 20th and 21st anniversary tapes, because he speaks well on those tapes. And when people speak well of Jimmy Kay, that's what they're speaking about. Not when he's sick, not when he's in the hospital, not when he's dying, but he's like in his prime. And for 10 years or so, especially in 1970s, everybody has a phone number in the world. If you had trouble with your meeting or your service committee or whatever the hell, you could always get Jimmy Kay. Am I right there? And everybody in the hotel, Jimmy, including Bo, called up Jimmy Kay. And he helped everybody. And then he got a little older. So what? That ain't a crime. I'm not but 58. I'm getting weird. Set me out 10 years.
But, you know, your memory starts to go a little bit. Now let's go further.
I changed the rules. I changed it. Turned 50.
Okay, anyway, the basic text got approved by the committee in Miami, Florida. That's the Miami World Convention. Remember when I said the World Convention, the Liquor Committee followed us up? Miami World Convention, Miami Liquor Conference. But we weren't done after a week, so we stayed over in the clubhouse for a few more days and got done. And the way we knew it was done was because people started saying, well, change this. And somebody said, no, we reviewed that at the last conference. Well, change that. No, that's mentioned over here. So the committee is a whole. And so I went out and hauled Joseph and I said, they're done. You can do another thing on this book. So that's when it was approved. I went back in, suggested they all raised their hands, and bam, there it was. The miracle happened. Down on the beach with Jim M, Greg P, Joe Parker, and myself, and Jim and Joe and our functions. And Greg Pierce was like our mentor or something. And we were like a triangle. And I was good at some things, and Jim was good at some things, and Joe was real good at some things. And but together, we were a good team. And we were on the beach, and the book was done. And the moon was like that. And we were talking about various things in the future. And I said, I want us to go forward and do for others what's been done for us. And if we run into people that want to do some good thing for our customers, that we help them. We give them the information that we have. We introduce them to people they need to meet. And we call those people and let them know they come in, whether they be well received and ease the way for them. And I've become in the last few years, especially about, I think, the last 5 years, NA is a family. NA is a very large extended family. It's not a tribe. If it were a tribe, I would be a chieftain. Where are my feathers? It's a large family. It's ruled by the moment, and who needs what, and who's got it, and how can we get it to them? And everyone of us plays a role in that. And that's a society. You people need to study your fellowship as a society. What are the social rules of Narcotics Anonymous? So they're the big blank. Why don't we savage newcomers? What happens when we fuck over newcomers? Sell insurance, sex, whatever form it takes. The only thing really bad about sex is it gives them excuses to say, you don't really care about me, you just want to fuck me. So you don't want to fall into that trap. I mean, their disease won't send to use, right? So if they can get over on you, they're good to go. So we don't, after a while, we learn the rules, and we don't let them get over us because we love them. We don't want to die. And if you want to get laid on your own damn time. You know? Remember that. But anyway, that's our vision for the future, is that you people, and what you're learning, you share it with others, and they share it with others, and you learn more, and build more, and have other conferences like this, and put it in writing. And if somebody comes up to you and says, you know, I read what you wrote in the ship, I must have seen it. You say, exactly where is it, must have seen it? And what would you like to be corrected? And to all possible corrected. Who gives a damn? Let's get it right. And if it's in writing, if it's right, let's put it in writing. Because if it's not in writing, the disease can cope with it easier. And Camus said, writers write. Writers are driven to write. I have to write.